Welcome to A Meaningful Marketplace.
I'm Sarah Massoni from Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center, where I've helped countless dreamers launch their new food products. It's the science of taking a food delight from the kitchen to mass manufacturing and still keeping its great taste. That's what I do. I've been called the woman with the million-dollar palate, although I haven't tried to cash that check yet. Listen in weekly for real-life stories.
I'm Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce and author of Preservation Pantry, Modern Canning from Root to Top and Stem to Core. I love inspiring business owners to get started on their journeys, encouraging folks to be part of their local community, and I'm excited to help business owners tell their stories. Join us as we explore the journeys of women entrepreneurs in the food and beverage industry. Hello and welcome to Missoni and Marshall, the Meaningful Marketplace. We are here weekly to discuss the journeys of food entrepreneurs. We're glad you joined us today as we bring you stories of hope and inspiration. This is Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce.
And Sarah Massoni of Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah Massoni. How's your week going, bud?
It's going just fine.
Yeah?
Good.
Are you working on any cool projects you can tell us about?
Well, you know, it's all top secret.
It's top secret. Can't, her lips are sealed. She can't talk about it.
Nah. I might slip up once in a while. I think maybe the biggest news right now is the Good Food Awards ceremony is coming up here in April.
And it's going to be here in Portland again this year?
Portland. It's at the Armory.
Cool.
I think it's on Sunday, the 28th of April, some Sunday night.
Perfect. Are you going to
have... Tickets are going fast.
Are you going to have a table at the tile?
OSU is one of the sponsors.
Cool.
So we'll probably be there.
So people can find you there. Very fun.
Also, this week is Sandwich Week in Portland. Did you know that?
I did. So lots of restaurants around town are doing different sandwiches and things 40. To celebrate. That's so fun. Do you have any plans to eat any of them?
I'll have to seek out the gluten-free ones and then make a decision.
Yeah. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm getting ready to start farmer's market season.
Woohoo! Do you got your leg warmers all washed up and ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready, getting all my warm gear because it's still, they're saying maybe we could still get some snow, which is not cool.
It's supposed to be over. But if you look up at the mountain, it's looking pretty white.
I know. It's looking beautiful. I dig it. We're into it. But I'll be back at the farmer's market in March. So I am just like going through all my stuff, making sure I have all my gear, making sure my tent doesn't have any holes, all that kind of stuff.
So hot sauce is like antifreeze, right? So if you just get cold, you just drink some of that.
I think so. I'll just take little chugs while I'm standing at my booth. I do have a tip for any makers that are doing winter markets. I buy boots that have heat warmers in them. You plug these little batteries in and recharge them. Then it makes the bottoms of your feet nice and warm. I also have a heater that takes a little propane tank. It's called a Little Buddy, and I carry it around because when I get cold, I get grumpy. So I'm prepared.
Oh, I'm glad you're in touch with your feelings.
Yeah. I don't want to be grumpy. I want to be happy at the market. And if I'm warm, I'm happy. So that's how I deal with winter
markets. I'm glad you figured that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I want to be into it. I don't want to be bummed.
Now, you were telling me something about an opportunity from Prosper Portland. What was that about?
Yeah. Our food news today is that Prosper Portland with the city of Portland are offering some grants for people that were affected by winter storms. So that application process is still open. So if you had anything like canceled events, if you're a food cart or restaurant or a manufacturer and you had pipes freeze and it caused damage and you lost product, if you, you know, whatever it is, if you couldn't get to work and you couldn't get to your business and you're a business owner in Portland, you can apply. Just go ahead and apply for it. The application process is very easy. You go to prosperportland.us and fill out the application and they will get back to you. So I just wanted to mention that.
So can I fill out an application because I need to get a sandwich at Sandwich Week?
Nope.
I need 48 sandwiches to support all the food people making sandwiches.
Unfortunately not, but I bet you could write that off on your taxes since you're a food.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So maybe that's stick with that idea. And we'll leave these grants for people affected by the storm. So if you were a business owner affected by the storm, go ahead and go to prosperportland.us and apply for those grants.
Nice.
And we want to thank our sponsor for supporting Missoni and Marshall. Thank you for helping to spread the word about small entrepreneurs. Let's hear a word from our sponsor. The Northwest and Rocky Mountain Regional Food Business Center is the proud sponsor of the Meaningful Marketplace podcast, giving a voice to food from across the 6-state region of Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming. The Food Business Center supports Northwest and Rocky Mountain food industry makers as part of the USDA's National Network of Food Business Centers, supporting a more resilient, diverse, and competitive food system as a go-to source for small and mid-tier food and farm businesses with a focus on underserved communities, providing education in the form of technical knowledge, business programs, and industry news. We sponsor trade shows, meetups, and conferences to connect growers, producers, retailers, distributors, and processors, all to stimulate business and raise the standards of our storied food industry. Join us as we travel through the 6-state region learning more about food makers, food hubs, and food systems. Visit the website at Northwest Rocky Mountain Regional Food Businesses.com to get connected. So we're not alone in the studio today. We are joined by Thomas Angel. He's the CEO and owner of Altitude Beverages, making non-alcoholic cocktails in the Pacific Northwest. Welcome, Thomas.
Thank you, Sarah. And Sarah, happy to be here.
We're so glad that you could join us today. We want to make sure that our listeners can follow along on your journey and find you. What's the best way for them to connect with you on the internet, online?
Yeah, you can check us out at altitudebev.com or altitudebev at any of our socials, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, whatever else the kids are doing these days. I think we're on it. So go check us out.
Perfect. We'll make sure to link you in our Instagram as well so that they can find you. We kind of like to start these discussions at the beginning. So can you tell us when you started and why you got into the beverage world?
Yeah, no. As you mentioned, at Altitude, we make non-alcoholic cocktails and we pack those with functional ingredients with the idea of being a buzz without the booze. So that unwind feeling that we seek, or many of us seek from alcohol, without absolutely any alcohol in there. And we started Altitude in 2020. So it was my partner, Laura, and I, and then actually my siblings, another Sarah with an H, and Alex. And it was a pandemic baby. I think there were quite a few businesses that came out of the pandemic. And for us, it was really driven by our relationship with alcohol. So my partner and I both come from backgrounds, from families with histories of alcoholism. And it was something that we had always been very conscious of throughout our adult lives. And up until the point where we became expats. We were living in Beijing. My prior life was in aviation and working with the Chinese government. And we had this wonderful experience over there. But we started to realize that we went from very occasional drinkers to almost every single night of the week. We were out either at an embassy party, at a work function, a concert, whatever it may have been. And by the time the pandemic hit and we got caught in quarantine, when a lot of the world started increasing their consumption of alcohol, we actually went the other way. And we started to evaluate how do we get alcohol out of our routine. We're a very active lifestyle, healthy people. You know, never really sort of wanted to be dependent on something that was so destructive for our bodies as alcohol. But still wanted that evening unwind, still wanted that ability to, whether it just be the two of us or out with friends, have that thing to hold, to sip on, that, you know, honestly looked the part, felt the part. And so when we got out of strict quarantine in China and made it back to the U.S. in summer 2020, back to the Pacific Northwest, we tried to seek out options, right? Like most consumers do. And at the time, it really was not very many things. I think a lot of people, especially the sober community, people who have been in this boat for a long time, you know, for many, many decades, if not centuries, right? It's sodas, soft drinks, juices, things that, you know, are perfectly fine in their own sense. But when you're at a social gathering and people are having a beer, a glass of wine, a cocktail, and you're sitting there with a can of LaCroix, it's not really exciting and kind of alienating. So we just decided, hey, why don't we come up with something? Why don't we make something that, you know, certainly meets our need? You know, we had friends at the time that were sort of going through a similar experience. And so, like any rational, sane adult, we decided to move to Bend, Oregon and start a beverage company. So yeah, that's how all this started a little over 3 years ago.
Can you tell us why Altitude? How did you come up with Altitude as your brand name?
Yeah, I think there's three elements to it. One, Bend is here at altitude, right? So kind of a play on our surroundings. I think the second is sort of that mind, you know, that mindset, that state in which we're going for is that sort of elevated, something, you know, kind of transcending beyond the kind of hustle and bustle of the day to day. And then, you know, the last one is really just kind of an ode to my background. Coming from the aviation world, even if you look at our logo and you cover your hand on the bottom part, you can see here, as I'm showing you guys, even though the listeners can't see this, it looks a little bit like a spaceship, right? Yeah, a little bit of ode to my you know, aviation background. So yeah, a triple entendre.
That's always good.
So you're based in Bend. Was there a big Bend event this weekend? Like the winter.
Oh yeah, the Winterfest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did you go to it?
We did. Yeah, we went on Saturday, which was a perfect Winterfest day. It was below freezing and just pouring snow. so that was pretty fun. Yeah, and they brought it back to the old mill this year for the first time since pre-pandemic.
So I noticed we had a lot of food friends that we've interviewed on the show that were there for the festival this weekend. So I just wanted to mention it because I don't think we've talked about it on the show, but there is a big winter fest in Bend that food entrepreneurs and other makers can go do. They just had it, but maybe if you're interested, you can apply for next year. When you decided to move to Bend from China, was there a specific reason? Was it the... Is that where you plan to open your business, or was it because that's where you wanted to live?
Yeah.
The altitude.
You know. The altitude.
Yeah. I grew up in the Northwest. I grew up outside of Portland and had always been a huge fan of Central Oregon. And when I was growing up as a kid, you know, Central Oregon was not what Central Oregon is as it is today, as I'm sure you guys can remember. You know, Bend itself was kind of the town that you stopped and got gas on the way to Sun River. And it's really just, it's blossomed, it's matured over the last, you know, 25, 30 years. And really, especially in the sense of a beverage hub, right? That's kind of the thing that, you know, drew us here was, you know, certainly you have the brewery, you know, epicenter with the Deschutes and the 10 Barrel and the Boneyards. But, you know, you have Hum Kombucha and you've got quite a few other, you know, non-alcoholic beverage brands or for that matter, just food and bev, you know, consumer packaged good companies. So, you know, I think for us when we came back and we knew that we wanted to start Altitude, you know, truthfully, we evaluated, you know, a few places and Ben just kind of felt right. You know, we spent about 2 weeks here kind of doing some initial groundwork, just talking to people, and the community here was very welcoming. You know, we were talking to people, hey, we're not from the beverage world. We'd like to start a beverage company. And, you know, just about everybody said, yeah, sure, how can I help? And we knew from that moment that this was going to be a great place to, you know, start a beverage company as somebody without any beverage background.
Are you bottling in Bend?
We are bottling in Portland right now and canning, actually. We are in process of starting to can here in Bend for the very first time this year, which we're very excited about. Which is, yeah, I mean, I know an element of the show, right, is talking about the opportunities and challenge for our space. Beverage is hard. Beverages, as I've kind of learned, is probably one of the hardest products within consumer packaged good to do because of the amount of equipment, because of the capital expenditure required. And while there's a lot of beverage companies here in Bend, the vast majority being breweries, you don't need to pasteurize alcohol, whereas non-alcoholic products, if you want it to be shelf stable, does require a pasteurization step, which is not needed for beer, for alcohol.
A lot of beer is pasteurized though.
For sure. But for small microbreweries, not very common. Once you get up to the Anheuser-Busch, you know, even 10 barrel level, certainly is. But for your mom and pop brewery, 99% of the time, they do not have a pasteurizer.
I want you to describe for our listeners the difference between a lifestyle in corporate and that of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, wow. Polar opposite. and not necessarily in a good or a bad way. You know, I loved my time through the corporate world. I had an amazing career. I got to live in 3 different countries, 5 different cities, got to work, you know, on, you know, multi-billion dollar projects, working with, you know, national governments. But, you know, I think the challenge that I ran into is, you know, I got an entrepreneurial spirit at my core. And working in, you know, even a really, really large corporate environment with resources, you're never really fully in control. And you're never, you know, able to exact the vision that you want to. You're always having to compromise. And, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, but I think that was, you know, one of the things getting into entrepreneurship, kind of the flip side of it, is you have all the control. You have all the freedom, which, you know, is a double-edged sword, right? It means you have to prioritize more. It means you have less guidance, less direction. You know, us included, and I'm sure most entrepreneurs do not have billion-dollar budgets to go out there and just sort of, take swings at things. So, you know, if you do make mistakes, right, sometimes, you know, they can be fatal. But at the very least, they're things you have to think through a little bit more critically than at a larger scale.
Talking about budgets, just curious, have you self-funded with friends and family, or are you taking investment right now?
Yeah, so we were completely bootstrapped to start. That was something that I think was one of the reasons why you know, we waited so long to get entrepreneurship. We don't come from, you know, families with immense wealth. And so we had to kind of go create our little nest egg. So that was what we did into the, you know, the corporate world for about 10 years. And we were lucky enough to save up enough to have that seed capital. And then, yeah, happy to talk about all the lessons learned of scaling too quickly. But, you know, our initial product line that we launched with was a line of oat milk lattes that within 12 months, we were in Sprouts Farmers Markets nationally. And so we did our first fundraise for that and learned all of the joys of fundraising money, especially as a consumer packaged good brand. But yeah, no, we have taken a little bit of outside money, but for the most part have you know, funded this through our own dollars.
That's really wonderful.
I want to be able to describe your products to our listeners, but I think we have to do just a little bit of talking about what some of these things are, because it's not things that we all know what they are. So if we are talking about adaptogens and nootropics and functional ingredients, can you just kind of explain to our listeners what those things are, and then we can talk about your flavors that you have?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, as you mentioned, functional ingredients for us is the broader category. And there's a lot of things that fit within the functional ingredient category. Obviously, the most, the largest category of that is energy, right? So anything caffeine related. We kind of live on the opposite side of the spectrum. We're living more in functional beverages that are intended to wind you down, relax you, you know, obviously with that, you know, mindset of an alcohol alternative. And so we utilize things like adaptogens and nootropics, as you mentioned. you know, adaptogens are, you know, naturally occurring ingredients that are supposed to help balance stress, right? So we utilize things like mushrooms. So we have cordyceps mushrooms in our mocktails. We have utilized things like lion's mane in the past. All of those with the intent of balancing out sort of that stress level within your body. The nootropics is, I think, probably one of the more interesting elements of our drinks that I think kind of differentiate. In the mocktails, we utilize amino acids, GABA, 5-HTP, and L-theanine. 5-HTP is a precursor to serotonin, so it's going to really kind of help with that, you know, euphoria type sense that we seek from, you know, from alcohol. Whereas GABA and L-theanine are really more to kind of calm and relax you. So, you know, a lot of these things are found, especially the nootropics, are found in foods that you would eat, right? Things that are out there. We're just sort of concentrating that a little bit more with that focus on that unwind routine. And specifically by putting it into familiar cocktail flavors, right? So we have three SKUs, our Paloma, which is traditionally a grapefruit and tequila, you know, cocktail. We're using ruby red grapefruit with a little bit of basil. So you get kind of that fun sort of botanical twist to it, kind of like an elevated cocktail. We have a mule, which we call our Mountain Mule, which is ginger, lime, and then a little bit of garden mint. Although it's got a little bit of a pine quality because we use a organic ginger pulp. And that paired with the functional ingredients in there kind of bring out that sort of alpine, piney sort of quality to the ginger. And then my personal favorite is the Blue Hawaiian. It's a tiki drink. And the fun part with our Blue Hawaiian, in addition to the pineapple, to the bitter orange and sweet orange, kind of making that Curacao flavor, we get to utilize blue spirulina as the coloring. So no artificial colors in any of them, but in order to accomplish that that fun blue for the Blue Hawaiian, utilizing, you know, an algae for that coloring.
That's so fun. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk more. We'll be right back.
Oregon State University's College of Agricultural Sciences and the Food Innovation Center are proud sponsors of Meaningful Marketplace. With a mission to serve all Oregonians, we are committed to giving voice to those whose food and agricultural stories are not always heard. By providing access and opportunity for a more diverse and just food system, because food brings people together.
So many five-star reviews. How did you do that?
Yeah, I think, you know, focusing on, you know, our core audience, right? A big element for us, especially with the mocktails, is we try to meet, you know, our consumers where they're at. So, you know, almost entirely our entire marketing budget is focused on outdoor active lifestyle type events. So we do, you know, 5Ks, marathons, relay races. And, you know, I think we, you know, just like ourselves, right, a mirror image of our consumer are those people who, you know, they're weekend warriors. They're not necessarily Olympic athletes, but they're the people who, you know, they like to go and do a 5K, or they like to, you know, attempt a Seattle to Portland or a Hood to Coast. And, you know, alcohol really just doesn't help them do that. But they still are very social. They still want to do these things. Heck, they're going to these events. And so I think by kind of meeting, you know, our consumer base, it helps weed through that sort of top of funnel, you know, churn that a lot of brands, you know, struggle with, which is, you know, finding your audience. I think we've been fortunate that, you know, we've kind of known who our audience is, at least from the onset, from day one. So I think if you go and meet your, you know, your bottom of the funnel, where they're at, it's a higher likelihood that they're gonna like your products.
I noticed on your LinkedIn page you had the OLCC story about the $132 million shortfall in alcohol revenue. Can you tell us a little bit about why you're excited about that?
I'm optimistic that having a shortfall in terms of alcohol sales is a sign that people are drinking less. Right, is a sign that people are going out and seeking non-alcoholic options, especially in that setting, which is where I think, for me, you know, I will say we are not anti-alcohol. I am pro whatever it is that you want to do that alcohol may not help you go do. And specifically, I'm pro having options for those people. And what we've learned actually is probably over 80% of this category of adult non-alcoholic options are people who still consume some level of alcohol. They just are trying to reduce. And so I think, you know, especially in the context of a liquor store or for that matter, you know, bar, restaurant, concert venues, places that where people are consuming, you know, alcohol and non-alcoholic products there, if you give them better options, they'll maybe switch from that second glass of wine or that second cocktail to, you know, an elevated mocktail or a non-alcoholic beer. And you're actually getting more value from that consumer, right? You're getting more spend, you're getting more enjoyment, and you're also offering them the option to reduce their alcohol intake, which ultimately benefits their health. So that's where I would say I'm excited is that, you know, it's less of alcohol sales are down. It's, you know, the inclusivity of the category is getting bigger.
I also saw that you're one of the top 13 startups to watch. And you were mentioned in an article.
Yeah, no, super lucky for that opportunity. The Portland Business Journal, you know, named us back in December as one of the 13 Oregon startups to watch for 2024. Yeah, really fortunate for that. I think, you know, that is driven by the fact that we're trying to make waves, right? We're trying to make waves not only as a product and for that matter, not even just as a brand, but, you know, I think as a movement, you know, I think for us, it's been cool to see over the 3 years when we first started and we were telling people, hey, we're going to do, you know, non-alcoholic, you know, cocktails and they're going to have these functional ingredients. A lot of people who are like, nah, I don't get it. You know,
I think people, it makes like really good dialogue though, for people to have to, you know, when we, Sarah and I go to a lot of food shows and when we go to those food shows and walk around, a big category over the years has become just any beverage alternative that's non-alcoholic. Yeah. And when we, you know, when I first started going to those shows, there wasn't really anything like that. So it's nice to see. And I do think it makes people have important conversations. You know, you're talking about coming from a corporate world where people always are encouraged to go out and have drinks and you meet up with people. And I think that spreads across a lot of different industries. And I think in the food and beverage industry, it's like that as well. And, you know, I go to lots of events with Sarah and she doesn't drink really ever. And so, you know, sometimes there's no options for her. It's like you can take your cup to the bathroom and fill your water glass or whatever. Like, there's nothing.
Oh, I always say like, hey, can you make something for me? And they're like, yeah, we'll figure something out.
But I think it is starting to become more of like a general conversation. Like, what are we going to offer people that isn't alcohol? And I think that's really important. I think it's important to have options for everybody. You did mention some lattes that you were doing. Did you did you start doing that product and you don't do it anymore, or you just haven't talked about those yet?
Yeah, correct. So, you know, our initial thesis, and granted, this is a thesis from people outside of the, you know, the industry coming into it, was routine base, right? And we really wanted to target not only the evening routine with those alcohol alternatives, we wanted to target morning routine as well with our line of lattes, utilizing those same, you know, similar type of functional ingredients, but with the emphasis on energy without the jitters, right? How can you have, you know, a coffee latte, a matcha latte, a chai latte that's going to give you the energy, going to give you that focus that you want from your Starbucks or from your, you know, morning cup of joe, but without that sort of vicious cycle of needing to drink 3, 4, 5 cups and then kind of crashing and then, you know, kind of wanting that evening beer, evening glass of wine to wind you down that then makes you need to drink, you know, 3, 4 cups of coffee in the morning to knock off the hangover. And so, you know, at the time that category was a bigger category too, right? Especially through the pandemic, ready to drink, you know, coffee, latte options was a much easier route for us to market to start. You know, hindsight's 2020. That is also probably one of the hardest beverage categories to manufacture. You know, lattes, if you want them to be shelf stable, require retort pasteurization, which for anybody who knows what that is, knows that there's not a lot of facilities in the entire of the United States that have that capability for canned beverage. So we had a lot of hard lessons there. I think, you know, when launching that line, like as I mentioned before, we had a lot of interest and a lot of traction in terms of like retail placements. But because of the manufacturability or lack therefore of manufacturability of that product, we didn't have great margins. And so, you know, as a bootstrap brand, we pretty quickly ran into the conundrum where, you know, we were growing ourselves to death. You know, we were getting all this top line revenue, we were getting all these retail accounts, and we're looking at the bottom line and we were saying, where's all the money going? But I think more importantly than even just the financials of it, it's the consumer. I think for us, what we learned with the lattes was great product, good to have, but not a need to have.
How do you wind that down?
It was a long process. It was, you know, I think for us, we were fortunate that we had the mocktails. We had a growing consumer segment that were, you know, sort of giving us an opportunity to grow into something else. But especially as a, you know, as a small team with a lot of resources committed to a product line like the lattes, you know, it probably took us 6 to 8 months longer than we probably should have to discontinue that, because it's hard. It's hard when you have
inventory
like,
and cans with printed cans and stuff like that that you want to use up, right?
Fortunately, we didn't have like a large inventory of printed cans. We used shrink sleeve labels on that line. So that, you know, kind of helped, you know, I would say the bigger thing for us was giving up retail relationships, right? You know, having worked so hard to scale to 15 states and, you know, over 1,000, you know, doors, like we knew that, by discontinuing that line, we were going to have to shrink. But really, you know, what kind of came to it was, we found, you know, a product where people were buying it more than just for the liquid. They were buying it for, like I said, kind of this movement. And it was more about something that was emotional rather than logical. And we had margin. We had a product that we could produce in our backyard. We had a product that, you know, even at small scale, we had that ability to drive, you know, money back into the business. Like I say, I think the lattes was like, you know, an MBA for us.
It's like an advertisement. I noticed that you're going more direct to like bars and food service venues instead of retail now. Is that working better?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're still focused on both. I think for us, especially having that opportunity to be in on-premise, in bar, restaurant, tap rooms as a small brand, that decision cycle is a lot shorter, right? In grocery, you usually have to wait for resets. Whereas, you know, if you go sell to a bar or restaurant, a lot of times you can get a decision that same day or certainly within a week. If you think about concentration of accounts, you know, if you look at a 5-square-mile radius, you might have a handful of grocery stores, but you have probably, you know, several dozen on-premise locations. And then the most important part from a small business perspective, if you have the opportunity for on-premise, I highly recommend it because they pay you on time. They pay you right then and there. They, you know, there's no slotting fees. There's no free fills. There's no TPRs. And that is, you know, the lifeblood of any business.
And they put your name on they put your name on the menu or they put it up on the wall. And then that drives sales at the local markets, right?
Yeah.
So they try you at the bar, it's less threatening, and then they can go buy their 4-pack or their 6-pack.
Agreed, 100%. It's great marketing as well that can then, you know, drive sales in your grocery placements as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's important for our entrepreneurs to hear that sometimes, even if you love your product and you made it for a certain reason, if you're not making money off that product, it's okay to discontinue it. Just stop doing it and find the thing that you are making money on and keep doing that. And I think that's hard for all of us because, you know, you've put all this work into it. You care about it. You love it. Like, yeah. You know, it's part of your world, but it's okay to stop. And it's important if you want your business to keep existing. And, you know, we got so used to, all of us got so used to all these pivots and things, but I think that we have to think about that all the time. I mean, constantly be evaluating what's making you money and what isn't. And if something isn't making you money and it's very hard to do, you should stop. It doesn't mean stop everything, but just stop that one thing and do something that will make you money.
That's good advice, Sarah Marshall.
Brilliant. Yeah. And at the stage you are today, because I think, you know, the thing that we fell into the trap that I've heard other brands, you know, and just businesses in general is, well, you know, I'll grow into profitability, right? When I hit scale, when I hit, you know, this point in time, then, you know, I'll get my economies of scale to be able to have that margin. And I think, you know, unfortunately, there were quite a few brands, you know, over the last 10 years that, you know, grew top line and kind of sort of did those things. But I don't think those days are there anymore. And even they might not ever have been there. And I think for most brands, to your point, it's like, focus on what you can control right now. And if you're not making money right now, figure out how to make money right now.
Yeah. What product do you think tells your story best?
Ooh.
Which flavor?
Honestly, I'd say the Paloma. The Paloma for us, it's not only our top seller. It's not only our, you know, our Latin flavor. I'm half Colombian. My partner, she's full Colombian. My siblings, obviously, half Colombian as well. But I think it also kind of tells a story of, like, how do you create, you know, that sort of cocktail, craft-like quality to something that is a mocktail, right? There's no alcohol in it. And I think it always surprises people when they drink that, because it really has an elevated flavor to it. It doesn't just kind of feel like, you know, sparkling juice. And I think something as simple as just adding that basil into it, you know, it gives it a nose, it gives it body, it gives it that sort of clean after, you know, taste. And that's, you know, that's the experience that we want to share with people, right? It's that, like, you can have non-alcoholic options that can be, you know, elevated, they can be refreshing, they can be all these things that you seek from a cocktail, but, you know, without the booze.
Is there anything that you're working on right now that you want to drop the bomb and tell us?
Yeah, so our current three SKUs, our current three products contain hemp-derived CBD, which was a big sort of angle for us when we first launched in 2020 as a small business. Kind of a ability to operate in sort of this growing market without having to compete with big players. But what we've really learned from our consumers is, and also from retailers with all the regulations, it's a good to have, it's not a need to have. And so we're going to be launching three new SKUs, similarly utilizing craft cocktail flavors, you know, functional ingredients, nootropics, adaptogens, but without that hemp-derived CBD, to also give our brand the opportunity to, you know, to get into Fred Meyer, Whole Foods, you know, regional type growth accounts, so that, you know, we can provide our product to more of our consumers in places where they shop. And I think that's, for us, is, you know, of more critical importance. What is it that they like about our products, and how can we get our products to where they are?
That's great. I think it probably, just from other guests that we've had on that have CBD products, we know that it can kind of be difficult sometimes to get into certain stores or to do certain things or places where laws are a little different. So this will just make it a little more flexible for you to be in wherever you want to be.
That'll be great.
Agreed.
Well, if our listeners want to get your products, how should they do that? How can they buy it directly from you today?
Yeah, I mean, certainly you can go to our website, altitudebv.com. We ship to all 50 states. If you're in the Pacific Northwest, we are in a decent amount of both grocery and bar restaurant accounts, market of choice throughout the state of Oregon. Shout out to Market of Choice for their wonderful focus on small businesses in Oregon. They were our very first grocery accounts, and they've been with us since day one, and Always love to direct people to a market of choice if you have one nearby. And then, like I said, a lot of great, bar restaurant accounts in Portland, Eugene, Bend, up and down I-5 all the way up through Seattle.
Perfect.
We love market of choice too.
Yeah, for sure. They're so great. All right. Well, final question. Do you have any advice for people that are currently dreaming up a business?
Oh, I have a lot of advice, but I will simplify it to one piece of advice. And I think, especially in food and beverage, start small. I think even if you have all the funding in the world, you have all the, kind of relationships, connections, start small and get whatever it is that you think your product is, because what you think your product is might not end up being what it really is, and get it to consumers. Go to a farmer's market. There's plenty of great farmer's markets throughout the Northwest that love, just doing even like drop-ins, from brands that are trying out new things, cottage license, whatever that is, keep your costs low. You can learn and you can then start to implement those next stages based off of consumer feedback. But if you start too big, too early, it's hard to scale back down.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. Well, Thomas, it was so nice to chat with you today. We're glad that you took the time to be on the show, and we hope that you connect with all of our lovely listeners. It was great to chat with you today.
Thank you so much
for having me on, Sarah and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
We record Missoni and Marshall live every week. You can find us on your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes. Thank you to our audio engineer, Lon, and our production assistant, Chelsea. If you would like to be a guest on the show, you can DM us on our Instagram, Missoni and Marshall. And we'll be back next week, everybody. Thanks for joining. Bye.
Bye for now.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Startup Radio Network. Listen, learn, launch. 10% of our gross revenue goes directly to women entrepreneurs in developing countries around the world through Kiva's microfinance program.